place I'd rather be than with you. Yeah, loving you. Well, well, well. Day will make a way for night. All we'll need is candlelight and a song. Alone with the love.
From WPFW News in Washington, this is Monday Morning QB, a news program with a point of view. Today is Monday, April 8th, 2024. I'm Sue Goodwin.
And I'm Chris Bangert-Drowns. Today on the show, why election officials are being threatened and what to do about it.
Plus, the Pentagon might grant artificial intelligence the power to kill, and how that could trigger a global arms race.
All that and more. Stay with us.
For Monday Morning QB, I'm Sue Goodwin. There is growing concern about the safety of election officials in the United States. Election officials across the country have reported being harassed and receiving threats, and are now struggling to find enough staff for polling places due to fears of assault. Elizabeth Howard serves as deputy director for the Elections and Government Program at the Brennan Center for Justice. Her work focuses on election security. So we turn to her to better understand the nature of these threats and what is being done to safeguard election workers ahead of November's election. And we began by talking about what these officials actually do.
So in the United States, we have about 8,000 to 10,000 chief local election officials. And the typical local election official is a woman aged 50 to 64, who makes about $50,000 a year. She has recently been informed that she is not only responsible for administering elections, which typically includes, everything from ordering the ballots, ballot proofing, hiring all the poll workers, doing all the training for the poll workers, selecting voting equipment, identifying and working with the site locations for all the different, potentially early voting and election day polling locations, do all of the work after the election, including the canvas, post-election audits, and certification. In addition to all those responsibilities, she's also responsible for protecting our election infrastructure against foreign adversaries such as China and Iran.
The Brennan Center is playing a key role in tracking these threats, and based on that research and her own experience, as Elizabeth Howard explains, not only have these threats become a signature feature of the current election landscape, they also represent a growth compared to previous years.
So, I was an election official in Virginia. I was the deputy commissioner of elections until 2014. And I can say, while I made some, unpopular decisions, no one ever threatened to kill me. And unfortunately, the reality for many of our election officials today is very different. We conduct an annual survey of local election officials. And in our most recent survey of local election officials, 1 in 3 reported that they had been threatened, harassed, or abused, and 1 in 2 is concerned about the safety of their colleagues.
The issue has attracted the attention of Congress, and last November, Elizabeth Howard provided testimony before the Senate Committee on Rules and Administration at a hearing titled Ongoing Threats to Election Administration. During that testimony, she described in some detail the nature of those threats. Quote, over the past 3 years, officials have shared experiences of receiving threatening phone calls and online messages, being followed or intimidated on the job, having their pet poisoned, and needing to flee their home out of fear for their safety. Close quote. Of course, we have to ask why something this horrendous would even take place. And to that point, Elizabeth Howard is among those who identify disinformation as one of the most significant factors. This would be the kind of disinformation that misleads voters about the voting process and leads to a lack of faith in elections themselves. In other words, this would be the kind of disinformation that convinced some people to believe that the 2020 presidential election was stolen and is preparing them to believe the same if the 2024 election doesn't turn out the way they wish.
False information about how our elections are administered is a significant concern for election officials. Election officials have done an incredible job of making it easy for people to vote. However, I feel like in some ways they're their own worst enemy because that doesn't provide the voter with information about all the amazing work that it took to make that process so easy and all of the safeguards that are in place that the election officials are tending to, that the voter who comes in and easily gets his or her ballot and easily, deposits it, they're just unaware of all of the work that goes on behind the scenes.
Of course, these kinds of threats have consequences, not just for the individuals who are the subject, but for the election system itself. For many election officials, these threats have become a major driving factor to leave the job. And this wave of resignations and retirements among election officials is adding new stress to the way elections are carried out.
So the loss of institutional knowledge that happens when we lose, currently we expect about 1 in 5 of our local election officials to be administering their first presidential election in 2024. So we're losing right now more than one local election official a day, and that loss of institutional knowledge that accompanies this high turnover rate can mean that election officials are less aware of the resources that are available to them to help them administer safe and secure elections, such as federal grant funds, such as the federal services available from CISA, so the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. And it can also mean that the new election officials coming in are more likely to make administrative mistakes. And unfortunately, these innocent administrative mistakes can in turn fuel the conspiracy theories and the threats, which can continue the cycle leading to the resignations in the first place.
So then, what can be done? There is considerable action at the federal level, and one of the agencies engaged in protecting elections from all threats, including physical threats to election workers, is the Department of Homeland Security.
So in 2017, the Department of Homeland Security designated our election infrastructure as critical infrastructure. And that enabled DHS through CISA, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, to provide a suite of services to our local election officials upon request. Two very important services that are offered to our local election officials have to do with assessments. One, of the physical security at their offices and at our polling locations, And two is of the cybersecurity at their office that protects our election infrastructure and our election systems. So representatives of CISA will come visit the local office and provide an assessment, a written report on the potential vulnerabilities and some considerations or options for mitigations of those vulnerabilities.
Another agency involved in this effort to protect election officials is the Department of Justice, which has its own Elections Threats Task Force, which was formed in 2021. Just 2 weeks ago, the Department of Justice said they're investigating dozens of reports of threats against election officials and have charged some 20 people. At a news conference where that announcement was made, John Dixon Keller, who heads the DOJ's Election Threats Task Force, said that the U.S. was in a, quote, new era in which the election community is scapegoated, targeted, and attacked, close quote. He also said, quote, the normalization of personal threats and attacks on government officials and their families is contributing to an election environment in which people are committing previously unthinkable crimes, close quote.
Right, exactly. And I was very appreciative of the DOJ's strong statement that they will not tolerate unlawful efforts to intimidate or harm our election officials. I think that was important not just for its deterrence effect, but also as a strong message to our local election officials and our state election officials that the DOJ has their back, which I think is very important under the current circumstances.
But Elizabeth Howard also says the effort cannot stop there, especially considering that many of these programs to protect election workers are underfunded, which is why she argued in her testimony before the Senate Committee on Rules and Administration last November that Congress can play a bigger role in ensuring that federal election security programs and policies are prioritized, effective, and properly funded.
You know, what we've seen Congress do somewhat recently is to provide grants which are administered by the U.S. Election Assistance Commission that go directly to state election officials. Congress needs to create a consistent federal funding stream for our election officials, and they should also ensure that these funds not just go to state election officials, but also go directly to our local election officials. Local election officials are largely the ones, as we discussed, responsible for actually administering elections, right? And paying for the voting equipment in most states, paying for the ballots, paying for the poll workers, paying for the polling locations as necessary. And many of the costs fall on local governments and our local election officials. So Congress, in while it is very appreciated that Congress has provided millions of dollars at this juncture on a, let's say, unsteady basis over the past couple of years, as election officials have faced new and greater threats to our election infrastructure and to themselves and their staff, providing consistent funding is going to enable our election officials to do their jobs and properly plan to make the improvements necessary to keep our elections safe and secure.
Elizabeth Howard, however, does make the point that it is not just the role of government to counter these kinds of threats, especially when it comes to dispelling the kind of disinformation that feeds them.
Absolutely. And everyone has a role to play in our democracy. And I think members of the public, for instance, can be responsible social media consumers. And if they are reading information about our elections, they should be very mindful of the source. And if they have questions about how elections are run or administered, they should go to a trusted source, including a local election official or a state election official. And, you know, not all election officials have this, but most election officials will have a .gov email or .gov a website address.
And then there are the election workers themselves who are fighting back.
So I think that our election officials who are currently serving are absolutely amazing. Our current core of election officials are not unaware of the threats, you know, and we have seen many of them stare down these threats and fight back. So Julie Wise, for instance, who is the King County in Washington, so the Seattle area election official, who somewhat recently received a letter laced with suspicious substance, which at least at one point they were concerned was fentanyl, gave an interview in which she said they're trying to break us, but they're having the opposite effect. We are dedicated to our jobs and we are not going to quit. And so I think her comments, you know, demonstrate what many election officials who remain and are staring down 2024 feel. And I think that that is absolute, you know, we are lucky to have public servants like Julie Wise.
Elizabeth Howard is Deputy Director for the Elections and Government Program at the Brennan Center for Justice. To find out more about the work they are doing on this issue and the valuable research they have compiled and continue to do so, visit brenncenter.org. For Monday Morning QB, I'm Sue Goodwin.
Last August, the Pentagon announced a new project called the Replicator Initiative, which was described as an effort to, quote, field thousands of autonomous systems. More specifically, the U.S. Department of Defense is seeking to produce what they call swarms of drones that will use artificial intelligence to independently make decisions about how to operate. The catch? The DoD has refused to say whether these AI-powered autonomous systems will be armed or not. Seeking clarity, a coalition of civil society groups sent a letter to the DoD late last month. In it, they warned that an AI arms race could be triggered if the U.S. isn't clear about its intentions with the Replicator Initiative. To better understand the threat of automated weaponry, Monday Morning QB was joined by Robert Weissman, president of Public Citizen, which spearheaded the DoD letter. Weissman began by describing how the U.S. military seeks to produce its yet-to-be-deployed replicator AI.
Most of what we're looking at with AI weaponry and AI systems is probably being developed by private corporations. So it's not necessarily the DoD's internal science programs that are doing this, but that they're encouraging and relying on private contractors to develop AI systems. So if you could understand the problem with ChatGPT, it's that it works pretty well, but it doesn't have common sense. It doesn't have the ability to reason. And no matter how much data it has absorbed and is basing its decisions on, it's unable to deal with outlier cases, things that it hadn't been trained to confront. Those are not problems specific to ChatGPT. Those are problems specific to the kind of artificial intelligence that's taken off so much in the last year, 18 months. And those problems absolutely apply to AI military systems or AI weaponry. If you think about the complexity of engaging in a conversation with ChatGPT, where you ask it something, it really didn't understand what you meant, and it wasn't trained to give an appropriate answer. It gives you a wrong answer, what's called a hallucination, but it's just a factually wrong answer. That's a pretty small problem compared to having an autonomous weapon system that's making decisions in real time about deploying lethal force in the complicated world of reality, of a battlefield or a lived environment, which is full of civilians and maybe also some military targets. And you're asking the AI to make determinations about which ones are allegedly appropriate targets and which ones are civilians on the fly. It's a far more complicated thing than dealing with language, as complicated as language is. And it's a near certainty that we're going to have a lot of mistakes when we rely on, if we end up relying on artificial